This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Once again, folks, glad to be with you on a Thursday for another edition of Thursday Coast with the founder of Daily Coast, the largest online progressive community, the founder of Civics with a Q. We're going to talk about some civics polling momentarily, and also the host of the podcast, The Brief. How are you today, Marcos, this Thursday?
Doing great. Doing awesome. Less than four weeks for the election, so crunch time.
It is indeed. We need to be up into it, folks. I hope you're encouraging your loved ones to get out to vote and have a voting plan. I want to go back to something you said last week, because that shouldn't be glossed over. If I heard you correctly, you said that amongst, was it white male voters, there was a change in Trump's favorability, according to the civics poll, civicswithaq.com. A change in Trump's favorability after the Mar-a-Lago search.
Amongst white, independent male voters, yes. So if you look at the at our civics polling of Donald Trump, and it's public, civicswithaq.com. If you look at Donald Trump's favorability ratings over the last 6 years since we started polling him, ignoring the primary, the 2016 primary, but, or I'm sorry, the 2016 primary, once he was elected president, the Trump's approval ratings hardened. And if you were to look at the chart, it looks like two parallel tracks, right? Like nothing moved the numbers. You think, well, this is going to finally damage Donald Trump. Like nothing damaged Donald Trump. It was rock solid. And it's been that way until the Mar-a-Lago raid. That is the first time we've seen any demographic starting to sour on the civics tracking poll. And it was white, independent, male voters. For the first time, he has lost a significant percent of that vote. And our theory, I mean, we don't know for 100% for sure, but our theory is that these are voters that actually care about national security, and Donald Trump is really, really starting to see some damage from revelations that he stole top secret documents and was stashing them at Mar-a-Lago. He's probably stashing them in all his properties, Mark. I don't know why the FBI hasn't raided some of his other properties, because you know he's got crap in all of them. Yeah. But yeah, it's taking a hit. We've also seen some public polling that suggests that Republicans in general are starting to lose some ground with college-educated white male suburban voters. We know female college-educated white suburban voters have already been sort of wishy-washy the last couple cycles. Their male counterparts are finally starting to get wishy-washy. And I don't think we're going to get them this election cycle. It usually takes a few cycles for people to finally change their party, their voting preferences. But I suspect that that Mar-a-Lago may have been sort of the straw that broke that camel's back.
So the party itself, that's white college educated male voters, not just you mean Republican college education.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, male voters are generally Republican across the board. When you're looking at male whites, they are very, very Republican. It's a two to one Democratic. I can't speak. Male white voters are a 2-to-1 Republican constituency, generally speaking. They'll be up in the 55, 60, 65% Republican support, generally speaking. And it's been that way for several cycles now. And so when we see any portion of that white male constituency start to waver, and so in our civics polling, we don't poll by suburbs. So we don't have a suburban versus rural versus urban split. We're just seeing white male independents, and they're starting to sour on Donald Trump. And then we've seen other polling that shows that suburban college-educated white men are souring on the Republican Party in general. So they're not exactly the same thing, but I suspect there's a bunch of overlap.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, and those numbers, I mean, as we look at them, they may not seem like big numbers, but he didn't win by big numbers. He didn't lose by big numbers either. So it's these small numbers that can make that difference, especially if it's independents, right? If we think of, and I know how you and I feel about some independents, and we're not into people are really independent. but they can, those who pretend to be independent, can be those swing voters in a lot of these states.
Yeah. So, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters are independent, right? They don't want to say they're Democrats. Tea Party supporters are independent. They don't want to say they're Republican. So it's independent, just sort of a catch-all for we don't like the dominant party, but most of them are going to vote for one of the two dominant parties. It's just the way it works out in practice. These are Trump-supporting white male independents that are starting to say that they disapprove of Donald Trump. So it's an erosion of his support amongst his supporters. And like I said, and why this is so spectacular is that nothing has moved in 6 years of us tracking Donald Trump. And we've seen an 7-8 point, depends where it lands today, but it's about a 7 or 8 point drop in support amongst those white independent supporters. I'm going to bring it up just to, as we talk.
I'm looking at it now. I saw the 7. It's exactly 7. Exactly right. Male, white male independents. It's a 7 point drop.
Yeah. And if you look, I mean, I'm not kidding, right? It's a pretty straight line. I mean, there's little jaggeds up and down, but that's just flow within the margin of error, but they like them, right? These white independent male voters like Donald Trump, and it has just been catastrophic. There was a drop in their support after the attack on the Capitol. So that was sort of the big first hit they had. But it was still pretty even until the Mar-a-Lago raid. And now we're seeing that ginormous shift. And that's not normal. We don't see that kind of shift in polling, generally speaking. People don't change their opinions.
Yeah. And they have after Mar-a-Lago. That makes a big difference. That is significant. Georgia. We're hearing, I mean, again, we're a month out. What is going to happen? Many of the polls have still a very close race between Reverend Raphael Warnock, and running back Herschel Walker. And of course, Herschel is having all of his problems, you know, with the controversy. Although I think that constituency is going to give him a pass on that. They don't care how many abortions he paid for. And we had a clip last week with Dana saying that it didn't matter. They want to control the Senate. Okay, be that as it may. But it looks like the polls suggest some ticket splitting. The Warnock may win, but Stacey Abrams may lose. That's kind of what has been coming out consistently. What is your understanding, or what are you hearing about what's going on in Georgia?
Yeah, that sounds about right. From the polling, we've seen that Senator Raphael Warnock is about 3 to 4 points ahead of Herschel Walker, with Warnock being in the high 40s. So we haven't seen a lot of polling with him hitting the magical 50% mark. Then we have, generally speaking, we see polls with Governor Kemp, a Republican, probably around 49 to 52%, and Stacey Abrams about, you know, 3 to 4 points behind. There's some outliers in, you know, various places, you know, some that show Abrams doing much better, some that show Kemp winning by, I think, 10 points. I saw one poll yesterday. And, but generally speaking, you know, it's never a good idea to look at the poll you like the most, or you know, be freaked out at the poll that looks the worst. You know, a good idea is to look at the aggregate. And the aggregate is about Warnock up about 3-4 and Stacey Abrams down about 3-4. Interesting dynamic. Usually the parties are pretty parallel, right? I mean, you look at the governor and a Senate candidate, and you would expect them in these highly partisanized times to track, roughly speaking. But there's a couple of things here that are happening. One, let's just, Georgia is a blue state by a sliver, right? By 12,000 votes. This is about as competitive as a state. And with all our effort at a presidential ticket, we barely eked out a victory. So this is certainly not a blue state in any real sense of the word. So it was always going to be a dogfight. Now, Walker is a exceptionally bad candidate, and Brian Kemp, the Republican governor, is probably one of the few Republicans that has been able to escape Trump's gravitational pull. So Trump went all out, you know, well, not all out to defeat him in the primary, and Kemp won that primary by about 30 points. So he's not all in on the big lie. And he does present a more moderate persona to those college educated white suburban women that are probably the swing vote in Georgia. Now, I'll say a couple of things. One is that Democrats in Georgia have a fantastic ground game. We saw that not just in the presidential race in 2020, but also in the runoffs that delivered the victory for both Warnock and for Ossoff, Senator Ossoff. So we know we have the ability to win on the ground in the way that we didn't before. So there's that piece. And the ground game can be worth about 3 to 4 points. And so even as you look at that aggregate of the Abrams race, it's within the margin of the ground game. The other thing is we're seeing record voter registration amongst young voters, particularly under the age of 25. They're very, very, very motivated by abortion and Republican attacks on gay rights and even the gun issue. And those people, they are just as hard to poll as sort of the nihilistic Trump voter that doesn't answer polls. So there is a question about whether the polling this cycle is actually underperforming for Democrats, that Democrats will do better than the polling. And this is not just me trying to cope with the situation. I mean, again, we've talked about this before. We can point to the special elections. We've had 11 special elections this year in the House, and in the 6 of them that had taken place after the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs, Democrats have outperformed Joe Biden's numbers in 2020 by 6 points on average. Polling's showing nothing of that sort. So there's a question. Usually, you know, people will say, well, okay, but special elections are different dynamics. Okay, sure. That's fair. But those dynamics historically have hurt Democrats. Democrats are the ones that don't turn out in the middle of the summer for a low turnout special election. It's usually Republicans that have no problem getting their people to the polls, and they didn't. Their turnout was fine. Our turnout was just much higher. So this is all to say that Georgia is in that band. It is within the realm of who the heck knows, anything can happen. So we better work our butts off, because really the team that works the hardest is going to win those races. Neither Warnock nor Abrams are destined to win or lose given on what we're seeing right now. They are both, they can both lose, they can both win. And it's our job to do everything we can to push them over that finish line so that they both win.
We were looking at this University of Georgia poll, And you mentioned, you know, we should look at all the polls in the aggregates. It's got Kimba by 10 points, so that makes it questionable. But here's the other thing. I don't know whether you noticed. Amongst 18 to 29-year-olds, Kemp is 51.7%, according to New Jersey, University of Georgia. And Abrams is 37.7%. They must have only asked 18.
Four of them.
And then 30 to 44, it's Abrams 50.6%, Kemp 39%. How does 18 to 29, I mean, how more 18 to 29-year-olds voting for Brian Kemp in Georgia than 30 to 44-year-olds? I mean, that's just...
It doesn't make sense. So I'm not going to give you our top lines in civics data because it's not a public number, but I can tell you that in our Abrams and Kemp matchup, we have Stacey Abrams winning 62-32. That is what the 18 to 34 bracket looks like. Just generally speaking, those are not crazy numbers. It's 2-1 Democratic. So any poll that has Kemp winning the 18 to 34, it's immediately suspect. And it, you know what happens? And this is endemic to a lot of polling. It's that it's just a small sample size. They're not reaching young voters by calling landlines. I mean, who's got it? So maybe they've gotten some cell phone numbers. And again, who's answering? My kids don't answer cell phone calls, right? I got to text them. It's just, they don't pick up a phone. So, it's tough. And
all is made. You know how many of us, because I'm sure all of us are getting more spam alerts. All the cell phones now say something is spam or something else or something you don't recognize. How many people even answer calls, you know?
No, so it's tough. And I don't say that to cherry pick this poll and say, but it's just all polling has that challenge. But immediately, like if you're going to say that Kemp is winning the youth vote, no Republican is winning the youth vote. Even if you go to places like Mississippi and stuff, Republicans ain't winning the youth vote. They're winning everybody else. They're not winning the youth. So one of the big questions is how many of those young voters are going to turn out? And historically in midterm elections, not a lot of them do. If we can get youth vote to turn out at sort of 2020 rate, then we're going to win a lot of races. And I actually think Stacey Abrams might actually be able to pull it off. So even a lot of this polling is assuming a major drop off in the youth vote. And there are lots of indications that drop off may actually not happen or may not be as steep as in a typical midterm election. So it's one of the wild cards. Like young people voting is a big one. And I will say that Dobbs, the abortion issue, is hugely motivating for young voters. And we're seeing that in the voter registration numbers, and we're seeing that in how many people are signing up to volunteer. And, you know, I talked to Christina Cintun Ramirez. She is the executive director of Next Gen America, and their job is to motivate, turnout, register young voters in key battleground states, Georgia being one of them. And she was talking about how they're getting close to meeting their 2020 numbers in activating young voters. That was a presidential year. So there's a lot of signs that the youth vote's not going to be as non-responsive as they are in a typical midterm, in as much as you would expect. And Mark, it's not just abortion. I mean, it's marijuana legalization or decriminalization and pardons. It's student debt relief. And so there's a big argument, you know, it's like, all right, so Biden and Democrats have delivered for you. If you don't deliver back, then you can't argue that people don't listen to the young, you know, to young voters. And I think that there's actually certain resonance. I'm seeing it a lot on TikTok. I'm seeing it a lot in the circles that my kids hang out in. So I'm hopeful. We'll see. You know, none of this is determinative. I'm not making a prediction. What I'm saying is that the signs are actually good. As we've been saying for a year, that this is not a traditional midterm election, that the dynamics are different. And any polling or any punditry that assumes that this is a typical midterm election is bound to be wrong.
Yeah. But that's good. I just can't see 18, 29-year-olds in the light of everything that's happening. Doing that. And you mentioned, like, we didn't touch on this. Biden kind of gave us an October surprise, did he not, with him pardoning, you know, those who are federally convicted for use or possession of marijuana. That was a, as he would say, a big effing deal.
Yeah. Can you just imagine that this country wasted tax dollars on going after freaking pot smokers and small time dealers? I mean, that's a stain on our country. And I'm glad that we're moving state by state. And now, you know, with Biden's action into redressing those ills, those wrongs, and just treating it like what it really is, which is, you know, the chill version of alcohol, I guess. So nobody's pot smoking and killing people behind the wheel of the car or beating their wives after smoking a joint. So it's, I live in Berkeley, so, you know, culturally, it hasn't been a big deal forever. And I don't smoke pot personally. It doesn't agree with me, but the idea that this is something that should be regulated and that we should be expending law enforcement resources on it is, it's always been sort of ludicrous. And so I'm glad we're finally stepping away from that.
Indeed. No, that is very significant and very important.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Biden talked with Jake Tapper, was yesterday, the day before. He says he still feels he can beat Trump a second time. So I guess he's saying he's gonna run. Do we have a choice?
No. I wish people. You know, I spoke at a class at here at Cal. I spoke at a big political science class and I did question answer and everybody wanted to ask if Biden's running again. And to me, the notion that this is even questionable is ludicrous. Of course he's running again. You never surrender. You know, all other things considered, the biggest advantage you can have in a presidential election is the advantage of incumbency. I mean, Trump was at 35% approval rating and he almost won because the power of incumbency is so freaking massive. So why would we surrender that and then render Biden a lame duck for the next 2 years? It just makes no sense. I mean, if he wanted to go, the way to do it then is to win re-election and then resign and then have the VP, whether it's Harris, if she sticks, you know, if she's still around, and then do that. But the idea that he would run for re-election would be the worst thing Democrats can do to themselves. Would be that. And then you have, I know Bernie Sanders is making noise about a primary challenge. That would be the second dumbest thing we could do from a self-sabotage standpoint. So I hope he's just being, you know, his usual cantankerous self and not actually considering challenger incumbent president weakening him before Trump or DeSantis takes a whack at him, because Bernie Sanders ain't winning shit. So I really hope that, I mean, it would be helpful, honestly, Mark, if Biden said, yeah, of course I'm running for re-election, and then put all that to rest.
Well, we will see ultimately what that decision is. Apparently, we talked a little bit about Ohio, but before we go, big debate in Ohio this week. The viral soundbite was this one.
Like just a few weeks ago in Youngstown, on the stage, Donald Trump said to J.D. Vance, all you do is kiss my ass to get my support. He said that. That's bad because that means J.D. Vance is going to do whatever he wants. Mitch McConnell's given him $40 million. He's going to do what he wants. And Peter Thiel gave him a $15 million. He's going to do what he wants. And here's the thing that's most troubling about this lack of courage is that after Trump took J.D. Vance's dignity from him on the stage in Youngstown, J.D. Vance got back up on stage and said, start shaking his hand, take a picture saying, hey, aren't we having a great time here tonight? I don't know anybody I grew up with. I don't know anybody I went to high school with that would allow somebody to take their dignity like that and then get back up on stage. We need leaders who have courage to take on their own party. And I've proven that. And he was called an ass kisser by the former president. Like just
So there's that. But then also apparently on Fox the other night, J.D. Vance still won't renounce Putin in Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that? But since I raised it, address, if you don't mind, to the what impact Ukraine might even have in 4 weeks. I mean, are people going to be also looking at crazy Republicans who won't renounce the war when they vote?
I don't think the war is going to have any domestic electoral impact. In fact, the war is one of the reasons that energy prices are so high and inflation is higher, and so it actually works against us in electorally. Unfortunately, it creates some of those economic headwinds that Democrats are, you know, pushing against. J.D. Vance is just he's not as high profile as maybe Doug Mastriano and Dr. Oz and Herschel Walker as really, really, really bad Republican candidates. But he's up there, and he actually has a real case to be made whether he might be the worst candidate of all. I mean, he's been vacationing in Italy. He's not on the campaign trail. Like he just assumed, I won the primary. Ohio's a red state. Trump won it by 8 points. I don't have to do anything to work at it. And so Tim Ryan has been plugging away. He's raised a crap ton of money. J.D. Vance has raised, I don't know, last I saw, he hadn't even raised $1 million, which for a Senate candidate is political malpractice. And Peter Thiel's not funding him anymore. I mean, he got him to the primary and that was that. So Mitch McConnell is actually on the air trying to bail him out. Problem is that all that the super PAC can do is buy TV ads. And even with the $28 million that Mitch McConnell has thrown into Ohio, the Tim Ryan has raised more money. And it's just a crazy thing. When you are a candidate, you're required to get the cheapest price on advertising. If you're a super PAC, they gouge you, right? And especially before an election, it's the highest possible price. The price disparity right now, for every dollar that Tim Ryan spends for a TV ad, Mitch McConnell's super PAC has to spend $4. It is, we've never even seen that kind of disparity, right? So the amount of TV ad, it's still heavily geared towards Tim Ryan. He's dominating that. But on top of that, he's got a ground game he's funding. There's a whole machine that's in place that is actually making Ohio competitive. Now, am I saying Tim Ryan's going to win? You know, I think Tim Ryan wins, we won a bunch of stuff, and he's the icing on the cake at that point. He's not going to decide whether we have the Senate or not. That's going to be Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and North Carolina. Those are the states that are going to sort of decide that. But Ohio, Florida, these are like the edge case states. And if we can win those while holding our incumbent in Nevada, which is tough, Georgia's tough, Arizona, less and less tough, then we can have not only a filibuster-proof Senate, but we can actually even have a little bit of a cushion there. You know, it'd be great if instead of having 52 and being right on the edge, we get 53, 54. So that is within the realm of possibility, which is really shouldn't be the case. But that just shows you how bad J.D. Vance is. And in politics, it's still kind of amazing. You do have to show up. Candidates that take things for granted. And the famous example of this is when Scott Brown won the special election in Massachusetts. after Obama had been elected. I don't know if y'all remember, you know, we had 60 seats in the Senate and Kennedy died. And so we had this special election and it was Martha Coakley for the Democrats and Scott Brown for the Republicans. And she didn't run. She thought this is Massachusetts. It's heavily Democratic. This is Ted Kennedy's seat. I'm good. Like, I don't need to actually work at it. And Scott Brown actually worked at it and won the race. And we lost that filibuster proof Senate majority. And it made, you know, from the beginning, it was a problem for Obama. So we know from history that even your state can't bail you out if you're just assume people are going to hand you the election. And so we have a good candidate in Tim Ryan. I mean, Tim Ryan's going to be somebody who's going to piss us off. He's going to be one of those. So let's not sit there and pretend that he's Sherrod Brown. No, he's not Sherrod Brown. He's going to be a pain in the ass, but he's going to get us a filibuster proof majority. And he's sure better than JD Vance. And JD Vance is still to this very day, doesn't seem to be taking the race very seriously. So we have an opportunity in Ohio that normally, like, we shouldn't have had. And even the $28 million that Mitch McConnell has put into the state. And I think I think Tim Ryan just said $40 million. So maybe he's put in more money that I missed, but that's money that could have been spent in Georgia against Warnock. That's money that could have been spent in Arizona. That's money that could be shoring up Wisconsin and North Carolina and Pennsylvania and could be attacking our senator in Nevada, right? That's a lot of freaking money that is being spent in a state that should have been easy hold for the Republicans. So this Ohio is actually a really good story. Even if we lose, it's having an impact in the overall battle for the Senate. But hopefully we win.
So just as I brought up, what's one about here, just as a glimpse of what he's been saying about Putin and Ukraine.
You have at one point said you didn't really care what happened to Ukraine. Where do you stand now? The former president, Donald Trump, has said, time to get to the negotiating table. President Biden says that we have to give them everything they need. Which camp are you in?
I'm very clearly in the let's get to the negotiating table, Martha. One of the things that really was crazy that Tim Ryan said last night, it didn't get a whole lot of attention, as he said, we needed to respond to a nuclear attack by Vladimir Putin in a very forceful way. What does that mean? Does that mean we're launching nuclear weapons ourselves and then we're ending human civilization? The only responsible thing to do with this, Martha, is to try to bring this conflict to an end before it gets to the point of nuclear weapons. You can believe, as I do, that the Ukrainians are brave people, that Vladimir Putin is a bad guy, without pushing United States on the brink of nuclear war. What Biden, what Tim Ryan, what these guys are doing is incredibly irresponsible.
Okay.
That's JD on what's going on in Ukraine. Since you brought, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you want to talk irresponsible, if the idea is that a nuclear armed country can waltz in to any of its neighbors by threatening nuclear war, that completely destroys our international sort of global order. What's stopping China from marching into Nepal? What's stopping India from marching into Bangladesh? I mean, it completely, this idea that because you have nuclear weapons, you are untouchable. Biden is absolutely true. So is Tim Ryan, that you there's no need to threaten a nuclear response. You just make sure that Russia knows that any resort to nuclear weapons, and to be very clear, the only reason Russia is threatening the use of tactical nuclear bombs right now is because it's losing the war. Because they, mighty Russia, is losing a war against Ukraine. So they have to understand, and we've seen time and time again, that Putin responds to people. And if you appease him, he'll try to get more. If you stand up straight, like from the beginning of the war, Mark, people may have forgotten this already. Putin said, anybody that arms Ukraine is a party to this war and is under threat of escalating this to the point of no return. There's, you know, euphemisms for nuclear war, right? Tone of no return. We've been arming Ukraine, and what Putin done about it? None. What can he do? None. He's not going to actually launch. So to be very clear, the contingency plans right now are that if Russia uses nuclear tactical nuclear bombs, which are small, not like a city destroying, but you know, to hit a troop emplacement, for that the response would be a conventional attack, probably to destroy Russia's Black Fleet, you know, Black Sea Fleet. It would be conventional. There's no talk right now of a nuclear reaction, particularly small nukes like that. There's no need. I mean, we can wreak plenty of destruction in Russia to Russia's war machine without resorting to that. So there is a fear mongering where a lot of the pro Putin crowd are saying, "Oh well, we don't want nuclear war, so we got to appease. We got to surrender occupied Ukrainian lands to murderous Russians." And we see every time right now Ukraine is retaking their lands, and every time they push Russia back, we find mass graves, mass executions, hundreds, if not thousands, of war crimes. So why would we concede that because somebody is threatening nuclear war? And if that works, what's stopping Putin from keeping on doing it to its neighbors? You know, they march in, and if you do anything about it, we're gonna nuclear war. So to me, that's what's crazy is nuclear appeasement. And we've had a policy; it's worked well globally, where we have this mutual assured destruction. You use nuclear weapons, it's over. That's what's going to stop Putin. Putin doesn't want to die. He doesn't want to see his country go up in flames. But sure, he just make it very clear. And again, you don't have to specifically say we'll nuke you back, but you say there will be dire consequences. And then Putin's got to think like, okay, this is not as easy a call.
You mentioned Bernie Sanders. The Sanders campaign, correction. Forgive me, folks, that's not accurate. The Sanders Institute has fired Tulsi Gabbard as one of its fellows. That is the latest news from the Sanders Institute. So just want to let people know that, and that's probably a good thing. Lastly, you mentioned OPEC. What is OPEC and the potential of rising gas prices going to do in the days leading up to this election?
It's at this point, I think that's all baked in. I think the gas prices are baked in. They're off their lows, and the anybody that's going to vote for a Republican or is going to vote on the basis of gas prices, it's already they're going to vote Republican. So what's been amazing as this election has sort of evolved is that gas prices, inflation, it's not that they're not relevant issues. It's that they sort of had been overcome by abortion more than anything else. The abortion issue is really shaking things up. And I've talked, we've talked before about that single issue voter. Republicans have the single issue voters on guns and on abortion. And they'll turn out, they'll even vote for Donald Trump, even though Donald Trump doesn't know family values. He doesn't even remotely knows what that might look like, being one of those morally repugnant humans in this planet. But they'll vote for Donald Trump because they knew for their single issue, which was abortion, that was the vote they needed to take, and it worked out for them. So we haven't had that. And I think we're finally seeing this cycle, we're seeing the rise of our own single issue voter. Those who say, okay, yeah, maybe I don't like Joe Biden, and maybe I don't like the price of gas, and maybe inflation is hurting me, but I want my right to choose. And that's the only issue that matters. And if indeed this single issue choice voter, maybe even gun voter on the, you know, arises on the left, it has the potential to dramatically reshape future elections. So this is something that I'm really closely tracking, because Republicans have 35% locked in every cycle. These people who are going to vote for no matter who they could put up Dr. Oz. And they may not like him, and they don't. Republicans do not like Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. But they know that Dr. Oz is a Republican, and that's all that matters. Like we haven't had that. We're maybe about 15-20%, you know, off the top that will vote no matter what. I'm not saying who they vote for. I'm saying that they'll turn out and vote. Our voters are very fickle, and that's why we have big drop-offs in midterm elections, and that's why states like Texas should be blue states by demographics, but aren't because our people just don't register, they don't vote for a variety of reasons. Some of them Republicans are suppressing it. Some reasons are just apathy. Some of it is poverty. Some of it is cultural. I mean, there's lots of reasons people may not register and vote, right? But they don't have that problem. And they're buttressed by the single issue vote that will turn out for every election, no matter what. We may actually be in the precipice of building our own core single issue voter and around abortion and on a smaller extent around guns as well, but definitely around abortion.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thursday Coast, DailyCoast.com, CivicsWithAQ.com, the podcast, The Brief, available wherever you get your podcasts. Marcos Melitzis, once again, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thank you so much. 4 weeks, everybody, less than 4 weeks. We got to do it, right? We got to close this thing out. So pick a state, pick a race. Everybody either has a race in their backyard or is near a race. Like in California, get yourself to Nevada. Like road trip, spend a weekend in Nevada, knocking on doors. Like there's so many ways. Make phone calls, write letters to undecided voters. There are dailycoast.com/GOTV. We have partnered with some of the coolest GOTV operations. We don't do our own GTV. We said these are the best operations and you will find something that you want to do. dailycoast.com/GOTV. Get out the vote. GOTV.
Thanks again, Marcos.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.